Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America, where we have hope for spring coming now that we're in March. And this also brings up Brain Injury Awareness Month. March happens to be. So this show tonight is going to kick off. Every week we have a show on brain injury, but I guess we're going to be a little more aware than we normally are this month because they say so. But I think the message in there is those of us who are new or who have been around for a while, as we get information and acquire more knowledge about brain injury, we pass it on to make others aware. I was just telling our guest tonight, we've both been around a long time, and I don't know about him, but I was misdiagnosed. Now, he didn't have this particular thing, but I was misdiagnosed back in 1995, and grace of God, that misdiagnosis didn't cause me to lose my life. But I'm still hearing and been here 13 years. But anyway, from 1995 to a few weeks ago, I'm still hearing about people being misdiagnosed who are suffering from TBI. Interestingly, one story I heard, excuse me, and this is a dynamic that happens often, is a friend of a friend was going to clean out the gutters, and the ladder fell, and the gentleman fell 15 feet down from the ladder, broke quite a few things. They did give him a scan because, you know, he hit his head, of course, and he did not have a bleed. He did not have a fracture. And that's what they said. And then they said, you just have a concussion. Like, no worries. And then they tended to the obvious things that were broken and some bad breaks. But I see and hear a lot, whether it's a car accident or an accident like that or whatever it might be, that they tend to treat what they can see. And many times the explanation of what might come out of that concussion or things to look for, to be cautious of if this happens, you know, due to the fact that you have this concussion, if you have any issues with your cognitive function or your memory and da-da-da-da down the list, come and talk to us. Not that they're going to be able to do anything about that, but it's very shocking as a person who's had a concussion, I learned, and I had even been a host here, it was 2015, I guess, and it was from a fall, and I wasn't in my right mind, and I didn't know it. And what freaked me out about that is that I had been a host for a while. When I had my aneurysm, I knew nothing, zip, zero, about the brain, never heard of an aneurysm, no support group afterward, did that journey, which is the Brain Injury Association theme for this month, I guess, is the brain injury journey. We're going to talk about that with our guest tonight, his journey, but I was having really bad headaches, and every day I would go and get a couple Advil or an Advil and a Tylenol and go lay down, and it didn't occur to me that that wasn't normal. That just wasn't normal behavior. And when I finally walked into, probably a month later, an emergency room, told them about my past history and the fall and how it happened. It was a whiplash concussion. They told me that I had post-concussion syndrome. But in any case, I was so shocked because I knew a little something about brain injury, but boy, I had gotten one from falling and had no idea that my behavior, that I was getting too many headaches and that just like a robot walking over and getting the aspirin and going and laying down, that was abnormal. And so brain injury is really something that we as survivors not only want to help each other and help ourselves to grow and move in a positive way on this journey, but we want to help others with their awareness level on all kinds of levels about brain injury. Because more and more things are being added. About 3.4 million people a year, I think, is the going number now, suffer a brain injury. It's, I believe, the third leading cause of death and disability for people over age 65 and young children. Just a lot of brain injury. And when I first got here 13 years ago, concussion was not considered a brain injury. If it was, it wasn't on any of the statistic pages yet. And people were fighting it. It kind of, you know, started the discourse around concussion, football, and the movie Concussion, and I remember getting tomatoes thrown at me for talking about the studies and some of the science back at the time. And now, by golly, concussion has been added to the list of what constitutes a TBI. Soon, I think, although it's already happening, and I'm not a doctor, I don't practice medicine, not giving advice, anything like that, just observing what I've read and heard about COVID and now also the vaccine and the spike protein that it generates can cross the blood brain barrier and replicate in the brain as well as every other organ in the body, including an increase in Parkinson's. I'm pretty sure that COVID, whether they want to call it COVID or post-COVID syndrome or long COVID, I'll bet that's going to get added to the list of brain injury before long. So you have a traumatic brain injury, which is an assault from the outside of the brain, a blow to the head, for example, like you'd get in a car accident, domestic abuse, that sort of thing. And they've also adopted acquired brain injury, which was my initial brain injury, only they have an association too, the aneurysm people, and their awareness month is in September, but the Brain Injury Awareness Association has incorporated acquired brain injury, which are assaults from the inside of the brain, such as a stroke, an aneurysm, a disease, a tumor, and like I said, I think COVID will be coming up. So the list grows. All of our injuries are different. They say that in all of the literature. And I will go with that to a point, but and then I'm going to shut up and bring our guest on, and he can talk the whole rest of the show. But, you know, it is, the brain is the brain. And while our paths are somewhat different, our injuries are somewhat different, there are some things that are close to the same in brain injuries. So, you know, to make it a little more inclusive for people, caregivers and survivors, you know, things like short-term memory loss, trouble focusing our attention, like brain fog or forgetfulness, neurofatigue, a kind of tired that you have never experienced unless you've had a brain injury, just running out of energy, kind of like your cell phone, when the battery just drains and it's off. Dizziness and balance issues, cognitive deficits, processing things slower than we did before, for example. Aphasia or trouble recalling or understanding words. Not being able to handle overstimulation. People, multiple conversations or noises going on around you. A lot of people hate the, including me, hate the bright lights and the buzz of the lights in the grocery store. Anxiety, stress, and depression. Just throw all those in there together, and sometimes PTSD, but there is an emotional factor that plays into brain injury. Many times chronic pain and sleep issues. Now, not everybody who has a brain injury has all those things, but I would wager that everybody who has a brain injury has experienced or lives with several of the things on that list that I put together, just listening to other survivors over these years. I think I made this list several years ago because they were, while we're all different, these are things I kept hearing over and over and over. So in any case, for those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. more will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, every Wednesday night, and I appreciate you. Tonight, I really appreciate our guest. Jeffrey Siebel, is a 40-year survivor promoting our abilities, focusing on our strengths through his book, Learning to Live with Yourself After Brain Injury, blogging, writing for a variety of publications, acting as a keynote speaker, and a variety of service activities, for example, serving on brain injury boards, etc. So he's really gotten engaged in brain injury since he entered the platform. You can read more at his website, tbisurvivor.com. Again, that's tbisurvivor.com. For those of you who are new around here, I always put in the program notes, you're probably clicking on a link either at braininjuryradio.com or any one of 35 places across social media. I always put the relevant website in the program notes. So if you're driving or you're listening in your easy chair and you forget the website but really want that, I will repeat it again during the show, but it is always in the program notes. So you can go to my site, inaflash.org, or braininjuryradio.com to re-find the link if you lose it out there on social media, and be able to find tbisurvivor.com. Jeffrey experienced a traumatic brain injury, or TBI as we in the trades know it, in 1975, when as the result of a car accident, he was in a coma for a month with frontal lobe and brainstem injuries. His goal now is to provide meaningful support to those who have experienced a brain injury by helping them find the means within themselves to live a fulfilled life. Since his TBI, he's had several jobs, but has most always found time to spend writing and speaking, and was on the founding board of directors of the Massachusetts chapter of the National Head Injury Foundation. Jeffrey's currently an author and speaker living in Maine. He doesn't focus so much on retelling his own experience as on what it takes for those who have had a traumatic brain injury to live a fulfilled life. And with that, I am going to bring on Jeffrey. Where's my cursor? Jeffrey Siebel. Welcome, Jeff. It's really glad to have you back after all these years.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Kim. It's great to talk to you again. I know it's probably been 6 or 7 years since I was on.
I think so. It's hard for me to keep track when I'm here every week for so many years, but, you know, one thing I notice out there on social media that those of us that are engaged in the brain injury community, whether we're, you know, talking or not, we see each other. out there. You know, we know
right.
that each other is still floating around being active in the community. And we've done it, you know, both done it a little bit different than some, although you were on the board, and I'll ask you a question about that a little bit later.
Sure.
About serving on the board, because I was glad to hear, well, I might as well just ask it now while
right.
I think about it before I forget it. But, you know, one of my, I want to pick the right word. It's not that I don't have one. Many times on a lot of these associations or alliances, the board of directors does not include someone who has experienced a brain injury. And I've had a problem with that because you're not about us without us is something that we say around mm-hmm. the network here, you know, and probably other places, but I heard it here, you know, from Craig and the People First people. But, you know, the top two normally get in the bigger associations, and they've all been guests on here at one time or another over the years. But, you know, it always struck me that salary, that there generally was not anybody who had suffered a brain injury on the board of directors, and that I love their websites during Awareness Month because there's great statistics to throw out, you know,
right.
like the ones at the intro there that I did so people can know really 34 million, you know, a year and third leading cause of death. You know, that's huge, and those help raise awareness. But I remember right after my injury stumbling on a couple of those places and saying, I've got this issue or that issue. What can I do? Can you help me? And they couldn't help me. There wasn't any support group anywhere near where I live. They didn't have any kind of a therapist on staff. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but I guess I was expecting, you know, I had served on boards when I was in business as a financial consultant, and we helped people with financial consulting issues. And so I guess I had an expectation as a brain injury survivor that I might be able to get some help when I didn't know whether I was on foot or horseback, and I didn't find it. And I reflected later that, boy, if they would have had a person mandatory on every board of directors of brain injury groups, that some really good input could be shared, and, you know, someone on the board would actually be representing the people that they're advocating for. There's no punch to advocating like somebody who's experienced it, you know. So what I just read is that in Massachusetts, the Head Injury Foundation, which there must be a lot of these different groups that have some overlap. I don't know that I know of the head injury. I know the Aneurysm Foundation, the Stroke Foundation, the Brain Injury Association, the Brain Injury Alliance. Not sure about the head injury, but that's wonderful. How did you happen into that position? And what was your experience?
Marilyn Spivak started the National Head Injury Foundation. And her daughter was going to a school for multi-handicapped kids that I was working with. And was working with the director of the school to try and set up a halfway house for people who have had head injuries. So that's how I met Marilyn. And Marilyn went ahead and started the National Head Injury Foundation, which became the Brain Injury Association of America after a few years.
Oh, then that goes back quite a while.
Yeah, well, my accident was 49 years ago. And so I got involved with the then National Head Injury Foundation when they were just starting, and they had me going out and doing peer visits to people. Oh. So I was doing that for a while. And then that's how how I got started with that. And after they formed the Massachusetts chapter of the Head Injury Foundation, they asked me if I wanted to be on the board of directors, which was good. And I wasn't really in the kind of shape I needed to be to take advantage of it and to be really effective. Because I wasn't always able to function very well in a large group.
Right.
But it was
And it sounds like they had a really good approach, whether you were ready for it personally at that time or not, because I'm not aware of them doing things like that anymore once it changed. And that was pretty early on for you. But, yeah, good experience to know that there was a group like that out there and that they were trying to do something to help support other survivors. It was so early, you probably needed that support, but hopefully you got it. You certainly got to challenge some of your deficits by serving in a position where you had responsibility like that so early on. Now, I know in the beginning you said in your bio that you don't go back over your story as much as you do help other people learn to cope with their new life. Now, I did read that it was, I think, 1975, was it, that you got in a car accident? And was in a coma for a month?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just tell us a little bit? We won't go back over your whole story, but people are always curious. The listeners are always curious a little bit about a person's experience, because there's so much identifying. You know, the first time I turned on this network before I was part of it, I flipped it on and in time to hear Craig saying he lived in a world of Post-it notes. Mm-hmm. And I must have turned beet red by myself in the night listening to this, like a kid with her hand caught in the cookie jar, because I thought I was the only one. And here's this guy on the other side of the country that I had never met or heard before. And, oh, my God, he was living the same way, doing the same stuff as I was doing. And that was a real pivotal change. So I always have people share just a little of their experience after, like when you woke up after a month being in a coma, what were you facing, and did you have any memory? And of course, people can get your book, which I mentioned, and I noticed that's another question I want to ask you later, but anyway, the book is called Learning to Live with Yourself After Brain Injury. Now, he had to learn to live with himself a little bit after brain injury, I'm assuming, before he wrote the book. So, but you guys can access the book, read that, and that'll be something in writing I encourage you to do. You can get the book at lapublishing.com. Is that right?
Yeah.
I looked for it on Amazon, and
on Amazon.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of weird because another lady I was looking for, same publishing company, and they were my sponsor at one time for a year, and I encouraged a lot of people to go that way, but I'm either not seeing, it seems like the thrust of that business has changed a little bit, because when I looked on there, I saw some of the cards that help you learn some support materials, I'll put it that way, and not so much the books, and none of them were on Amazon, which of course is the biggest bookstore in the world. You know, everybody goes to Amazon and looks, most
right.
people do anyway, and so it kind of surprised me that people weren't automatically on Amazon, but in any case, you can pick up the book, and there is a link on TBISurvivor.com that'll take you to the book, or you'd go to Lash Publishing to find it. But in any case, when you woke up from that coma, were you, what kind of shape were you in, and were you aware of what had happened to you? Why don't we start there?
I knew something had happened. I didn't know what exactly, and I had to be told sort of what happened, and I just knew that things were very different than they had been before. I mean, I couldn't walk. I couldn't really talk. You know, it just the whole gamut of things that you hear about. Just I couldn't do almost everything that I used to be able to do. And the biggest thing for me was knowing that my life had changed, and I didn't know how it had changed. But I remember one day, about 3 days after I woke up, and they had moved me up to another room, and I was looking out the window, and I got really excited because I said, well, you know what? Now my life has meaning. And it has meaning because I was given a struggle to fight through, and because I could share that with other people. And it's the struggle that gives the meaning and gives the value to what, you know, what we're able to do. If there was no struggle, it wouldn't be as rewarding when you get to where you're going to go. And so that was the biggest thing for me, was knowing that it was going to be some kind of battle, some kind of battle I couldn't define, and just knowing that it was going to shape my whole life.
You were brave and optimistic. You know, when my surgeon and you had time on me, I was just in a coma 11 days, but, you know, had this craniotomy and woke up and had no idea what had happened, and the doctor declared a success, and the fact that I lived and his surgery saved my life, not to be minimized, was a success. But because when my hair grew back from being shaved and you couldn't see that yucky sea scar anymore and I looked the same, there was an expectation from me, because I wasn't told any different, and from everyone around me, family, friends, people I worked with, that it's like a broken arm, you know, it's broken, you get the fix put in and have some therapy and then things go back to normal. And that isn't how it worked. And I wasn't as forthcoming as you. I tried to act as if I could go back to where I was, and that really held me up. And it didn't help much that there wasn't, you know, any support group. I never met another brain injury survivor for years. I mean, years afterward, the doctors didn't offer anything except eventually to a psychiatrist, that kind of therapist. And I used to get really angry about that. And then after I'd been around here for a while, you know, you got to find your sense of humor. And I said, if you weren't a little crazy before you got into the system, you are by the time you've been in the system for a while. And you do need a few couch hours, you know, just to emotionally dump some of those things that you weren't expecting, that you didn't, no pun intended, get a heads up that you would be facing, and suddenly you are and don't have the rule book of how to do that. And so the fact that you had such a positive attitude, I just tried to go on like it didn't happen. It was so uncomfortable, and I guess I wasn't ready to process what had happened, and so I tried to just move forward as if it didn't happen. And that, I don't recommend that. So we're going to go back to Jeff's scenario. I don't recommend you try to just go on and act like it didn't happen, because you're going to have some rude awakenings when they pop up, which make it even more difficult. But to know when something that serious has happened and you face your mortality, that that is a game changer. And regardless of what your residuals are, the event itself is a game changer that changes you forever, if not physically, spiritually, emotionally, on some level, you're changed when you face your mortality in such a traumatic way. So we'll go back now. I'm sorry to interrupt, but so you got that burst looking out the window. Nature has a way of helping with that, of knowing that you were going to have challenges and your life was going to be different. And you apparently didn't have any doubt that you were going to make it through it. You just saw it, it sounds like, as the next chapter was going to be this ordeal, experience, change, that you were, in fact, going to work through and then have that piece of the pie of your life to share and help others with.
I think that's pretty accurate. One of the things to help illustrate that is that, in my book, I talk about this a lot, that, you know, everybody who had a brain injury, they talk about recovery. When am I going to be back what I was? When am I going to be here? What do I have to do this? And rather than looking at it as recovery, I looked at it as discovery, finding out what my new life was about. And I was learning about myself so I could live that life. And there are a lot of components to it. But with recovery, the idea of, always having to recover, what you're trying to do is get back what you lost. And you're not taking advantage of the new person you are now. And you're not learning about what that new person does and is, and what that new person values. And so to really live your life, you've got to be able to understand that things are different and I'm going to discover who I am so that I can use my new tools to serve my purpose. And that's sort of the way I looked at it through my life, in that I was just figuring out who I was at first, and for a long time that went on. And then once I figured out who I was, to some extent, I needed to, activate that part of me so that I was living the life I wanted to and I was fulfilled.
Yes, exactly. Well, you came to that conclusion early on, earlier than some. In the beginning, when I read about the four A's, awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation, that was when I, years later, was discovering what you're talking about. I had to have an awareness that my life was going to be different. There wasn't going to be any going back. I was who I was. And so I had to be aware of the change in my life and accept that these are the cards, this is the situation that I'm, the reality that I'm living now, and I need to take appropriate action to make a life worth living and adapt to this new life in a way that would help me put my life and me back together and then share that journey with others. But it took me a lot longer, but what helped me more than anything was, sounds like you just innately were wise with me. It really, everything clicked for me, kind of like your window changing the room. When I got here years later and got to interface with other people who had had brain injury, I learned so much from those people, other people, about myself. Even today, as I move forward in my own journey, every time I do this, I learn something. Or, I don't know if you still have problems with your memory, but there's things that have been amazing sage pieces of advice that have helped me immensely in my life, and then I've gone through a tumultuous time or reality of something, you know, that's impactful that's happened in my life, and I forget, you know, I forget a couple of those arrows in my quiver, and then I'll be darned, you know, somebody will be on the show and they will address that in their own story. And so learning through repetition for me and from other people helped get me to where you started. So that was real grace, a testament of faith. I don't know what else you would attribute it to, that you got it exactly what was going to need to be done from the beginning. But it's
yeah,
great
I don't know.
You did.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that happened. It's just how I was built, I guess. But I will say that one thing that may have led to it was when I was in college, before my the year before my accident, my friend and I, we had this running joke that we knew somebody whose grandfather wrote a book called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. That was in the 30s. And we read the book, and the second chapter was called Got a Problem? That's Good. So we used to joke about that all the time, and I think I looked at this as having a really big problem, and it was something I could overcome.
Now that explains it, especially that you did that with a friend, and that it was something that was repetitive with you guys. You know, that you talked about it and joked about it, and then this came along and it definitely fit that definition of problem. So that chapter, that was great, the years, you know, a little bit before, that you had a clue by reading that. That's funny. Isn't it funny how, I don't know if you've noticed, but the things that we need to get through the journey, sometimes, you know, people call them coincidences. I say that coincidences are God's way of working anonymously, but isn't it ironic that you would have read that and joked about it with a friend and had that awareness and then come up to what was probably at that time, maybe since, one of the biggest problems, unexpected, you know, out of the blue, where you were going to really have to test the muster of chapter two.
Right. Well, it is kind of crazy how that happened, but and I'm not even sure how much relevance it has, but it's something I thought about.
Yeah. So. I can see it. I could see it when you said it. I was like, yep, that is a problem. So, my goodness. All right. So your recovery, what was that process like? And when you were cut loose, I'm going to assume that you probably didn't go back to life, job, family exactly like it was before. So what did you find helpful coming to grips with this new life?
What I found most helpful was felt like I had the ability to take risks and to fail and not be unhappy or ashamed of myself because I failed. After, you know, I was fortunate in a way in that my accident was when I was in college. So I didn't have a family. I was still learning about life. It was a good forum for me to try and go back to recover or discover. So I actually went back to college 2 months after I woke up from my coma, and
wow,
which I knew was going to be hard, but it was the best thing for me. It was really difficult, but putting myself in situations continually tested me and made me learn new things was great. After I finished college, which was, I had another 2 years left, I moved to Colorado from Massachusetts and to a ski town, and I applied for a job at the radio station in town. And even though I had a speech problem, and I used to have a radio show when I was in college, but I really fumbled my way through that. Somehow I got the job. Don't know how the hell I got the job, but I made a practice tape, and he hired me. And then at the first day when I was on, I was reading the news, and he came into the studio and he said, "Do not read the news anymore." He told me not to talk. He told me not to talk. I said, "Well, I'm on the radio. I have to talk." But he said, "Talk as little as possible." So that was another. So this was another problem that I had to rectify if I was going to keep the job. Just reading, and reading in front of mirrors, so I could watch my mouth move, and reading into a tape recorder, reading the news over and over and over again, and you know, I stayed there like a year and a half, and he made me music director, and you know, it all worked out. I was very good by the time I left, and it was. I mean, I guess I love challenges and working at things, and you know, the whole brain injury thing fit right in because it was one huge challenge that, you know, continues to this day.
Yes, and that I want to encourage people to look, because one of the things that has struck me by your writings, even beyond your book, the blogs or articles that you write on, again, it's tbisurvivor.com, are so honest and insightful. The things that you write about that I appreciate you doing it and really enjoy going to your website and seeing the things that you're talking about and how honest you are about it. When things are challenging, I've seen you write about things that are challenging, even though you're positive, you know, no shortage of positivity there. You do talk about the struggles and the challenges that you've had, that people have. And it's probably would be comforting for anyone, but I just say, I guess, you know, speaking as another survivor, you know, reading and knowing your history, you know, that you've been on this journey and the things that you write about, it's nice to have your insight regularly when you do that. So anyway, I encourage everybody to check out the website because it's a really good one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You wrote recently, and we're kind of at a turning point now, but you did write an article. I thought we'd maybe talk about a couple of the articles and then anything else that you want to talk about. But you talked about COVID anxiety and brain injury. And The only reason I want to bring that up now and have you talk about it a little bit is, the CDC just had a change, as some people may or may not know, in the last 5 days, I think, on their protocol that we've been operating under about if you get sick, how long you should quarantine. And, first of all, the CDC can't enforce anything. They can make suggestions that are supposed to be based on science and to help limit the spread and hopefully make the environment better, safer. And frankly, I couldn't believe what I was reading on these new protocols, because the disease hasn't changed. It's still very contagious, and it's a virus. And if you think of things like, think of something like the shingles virus or, any virus, they can park themselves for a long time and maybe never pop up, or they can pop up with a vengeance and really make your life miserable. Now, COVID, we hadn't seen anything like it. Well, and of course, we hadn't seen it. We could have only read about it in 1918. And so to say that people don't need to quarantine, and if they have a fever, which, I had to do a double take on that, because a fever hasn't been one of the symptoms in the current or the last couple variants. That wasn't even an issue. So a symptom. So I didn't even know why they brought that up, and then they talked about the vaccine and, get your vaccine, and, if you've got mild symptoms, go out and, cough and sneeze on everybody. I don't think they mentioned masking or distancing at all. I think they might have mentioned something about, keeping your sanitizer, not throwing away all your sanitizer. But there's even a lot of news recently. It was being censored for quite a while, but now more and more scientists are finding venues to talk about that the vaccines, because of a spike protein that those of us who got all the vaccines got put into us, are causing the same kind of problems that COVID, the virus, did, but in some cases worse, because there's no shutoff switch And so, you know.
I don't know why we're talking about COVID.
Well, just the anxiety, the thing that you wrote about it.
Because what I wrote about has nothing to do with the vaccine. It has nothing to do with the CDC.
No.
It has to do with how people with brain injuries emotionally react to the thought of this, what was then, when I wrote it, very scary and deadly virus going around. Since then, you know, viruses, I'm not a doctor either, and I don't know for sure, but what I read is that viruses get weaker over time. They gradually evolve. And my thought is that it's not quite as bad anymore as it used to be. We don't see the, I don't think we see the mass having to be on breathing machines as much as it was then. And maybe that has improved. It's still nobody wants to get it still. It's still something that you want to avoid. But what I wrote
right.
has nothing to do with a lot of that stuff. It has more to do with the mental state of a person who has suffered a brain injury and now has to go through all this masking and quarantine and all this stuff. And are they ready for that?
Right. Well, and the only reason I bring that up tonight is because the new boosters come out and the CDC changed. So even though what you say is true, I think that's still a relevant article because we're still being faced with, do we get a vaccine? Do we not? You know, would we be facing the same things that you wrote about or not? If we take away some of those precautions that you were talking about, will that put us back to what you were talking about when you wrote the article? I think some of that anxiety is still out there because it's a confusing situation. If you know, if it had chilled out completely, we wouldn't need the new the new vaccine. You know, oh, that was one of the other things that it said is that most of us had picked up some kind of immunity either by having had the disease or having gotten the vaccines, but why a new vaccine then, you know, every 6 months or nine right. months, you know, since that happened? Those are the things that it resonated with me because I was scared, you know, just going through. And the ventilator is off the table. They found out that that was one of the things I was afraid of because I was on the vent for 11 days, and I never want to do that again in my life.
Oh, boy, that is hard.
So I had a huge fear of that, and I didn't mind. I'm very comfortable at home. I didn't go crazy like a lot of people. I did go, you know, outside, you know, go for a walk and appreciate the beauty in my backyard, and I take pictures and things that, you know, in your yard, sometimes you're just leaving, you know, I mean, pulling out of your driveway to go somewhere. But, you know, during that time, I was spending a lot more time at home. And so I was actually spending time in my yard, and the adage of, you know, stop and smell the roses or whatever, I was, you know, noticing the birds, the different birds. There's red-headed woodpecker. around that was always knocking, and it would knock on our gutters sometimes. I'd hear this strange noise and not know what it was, and look down, and it was this red-headed woodpecker down there pecking on the gutter and then going over to the tree. And you know, we had an owl out there for a while. And back before I got some physical issues, some arthritis and some other things, so glad I did it. I planted a lot of perennial flowers in the yard. And so, you know, I was out taking pictures and really appreciating the fact that we had a backyard and appreciating the fact that I had planted those flowers. And I like to write too, and I do genealogy as one of my hobbies. And so I wasn't freaking out staying home like a lot of people were, because I felt safer. I didn't have to face that fear, you know, and anxiety of going out and catching, you know, catching this virus. So I didn't have the same issue that a lot of people did. I didn't like wearing masks very much because I couldn't breathe. You know, that's kind of rough. But they did find out that the vent, one thing is when it mutated, it's an arterial disease now. It's not a respiratory disease anymore. And they found out that in round one, you know, back in 2020 or whatever, when they were using the ventilator, that caused more damage to the lungs. And then as the disease mutated, it has now mutated into an arterial virus, not Tory virus. So, you know, it's changed quite a bit. But yeah, just the talking about the being anxious about the change, because a lot of us had already, you know, gone through pretty big changes in our life and some of the things we were hearing, and then the inconsistency of what we were hearing. It was one thing in the beginning when mandates were out, so they were telling you what to do. There wasn't a lot of choice there. It was just coping with it, which, like I said, I didn't have trouble with. But then as the rules change and it gets thrown back in your lap, how you're going to handle it, then you have to think of what the parameters are going to be, because there's such mixed information out there depending on what you read and what you listen to that it makes it confusing. And that can cause some angst about anything, you know, whether it's the economy or coronavirus or whatever, you know, whatever it is, just the angst of the not knowing and having to go through the process of figuring out what's going to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
To either cause the least amount of anxiety or what you're going to do to work through the anxiety. And I kind of saw that when I read your article, I kind of saw that period the last couple of years as another change. Not like the first one with the brain injury, but the brain injury changed my life as it changed yours. And then when the virus came along, that signaled a change of life for me. You know, I'm not 30 anymore and have some underlying conditions, and though it's maybe calmed down some, it hasn't gone away. And so just the confusion, I guess. Can you talk a little bit about what you had to say? People can certainly go there and read it themselves, but the two articles together, and I read them on the same day, the calming those chattering monkeys in our head and the virus and the anxiety, that those were monkeys in my head.
Yeah, they go together because the way, I'll give you an example. When 9/11 happened,
it was another big upheaval.
And mm-hmm. I figured I had just spent 25 years, about 25 years, trying to get my life in order and in a place where I could understand it. And now this 9/11 event happened, you know, and this is, I know it impacted a lot of people in a lot of ways. And the way it impacted me was that my life, the way I had planned my life, I had it all worked out, and I don't deal well with change. And it just messed the whole thing up. I didn't know what to expect. It was just a really, on top of the whole thing that it was, which was a, you know, basically an attack on us, it was just very upsetting to me in terms of my expectations. And COVID was a little like that too. This thing came in and just messed everything up. And as well as being very dangerous, especially at first, and causing a lot of people harm, and, you know, it being just havoc with a lot of people and a lot of families. And the way it affected me in a lot of ways was, now this thing is coming in and messing up my life. Luckily, I didn't get sick at first and didn't have to go through that. But it was the thought. It's the thought of it. When you have a brain injury, you know, you're facing this thing, and now you have to say, oh, I got something else to deal with that I have nothing to do with. And that's the chattering monkeys talking in your head about that kind of stuff. They're the monkeys that are in your brain that are saying, oh, you can't do this. You shouldn't deal with this. Oh, not this again. You know, all that stuff that you have to find a way to deal with. When you've had a brain injury, I think it's a little harder to deal with them because you're not as equipped to thwart them as one might be. You've got maybe a little less brain power, distracted, all kinds of things can happen. But it's just one of those things that now I got something else to deal with. So the chattering monkeys do go hand in hand with the COVID stuff. And chattering monkeys can happen with anything. And it's not just the COVID stuff. And we have to find a way to deal with those all the time because they're there, especially when you have a brain injury and you doubt yourself or you don't remember all the time. You're always down yourself. You know, one of the biggest things for me in terms of my personal stuff was I had an MRI 25 years after my accident. And for the first time, look, I knew I had been in a, you know, car accident, in a coma, and I had some kind of damage. And my neurologist looked at me and said, well, you've got brain damage. And it was the first time somebody ever actually said, you have brain damage. And it really affected me. And I got home, I drove home, and I realized that, you know, geez, I have brain damage. you know, I should forgive myself for always blaming myself for not being able to do this or that or the other thing. And I have a real reason that I couldn't do those things. I should not beat myself up anymore. I should forgive myself. And I pulled the car over and I forgave myself for always beating myself up and always giving myself a hard time and, you know, not understanding why I couldn't remember or I couldn't think or I couldn't do this or couldn't do that. And that was just a really powerful thing for me to do at that point of my life.
I think that's great advice. I mean, a great thought, because the thing you said is true, and other people too. I mean, when I think about what you just said, you know, when those things happen, and 9/11 was an excellent example too, because that was something we've never faced in our lifetime, and it was horribly shocking. I don't think there's anybody, I always do a 9/11 show, and I've had people on that were injured, had brain injuries that were actually at ground zero. But I remember, you know, there's nobody that doesn't remember where they were 9/11 when that happened. And, you know, a lot of us, a friend of mine called and I flipped on the TV just in time for the second plane. And I remember I was getting ready for work and I had my mascara in my hand and it come down and flipped on the TV and saw that and fell back into a chair in my living room and watched it and couldn't believe that that was real. You know, it took me quite a while to process what was even going on. Of course, it wasn't a joke, but you know, what do you do with that? You know, I mean, geez, Louise. Yeah. And my parents, who lived here in town, happened to have, they were down in Vegas on a trip. And, you know, everything shut down. You know, the airlines, if you remember, shut down.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
Everything shut off, and here's my parents, and I didn't remember, you know, well, it didn't really matter, but, you know, it was earlier where they were than where I was, and, of course, they were on vacation, but I called them, woke them up, and told them what little I knew at the time, which was just the fact of what I just watched. I didn't understand the magnitude of everything quite yet. And luckily, they had a rental car that they stole. they had a rental car because they were down on the trip, but, you know, nobody else could get a rental car, and the flights weren't going, and my parents packed their bags and started driving back to Nebraska, from Vegas to Nebraska. And, of course, none of us knew what else might be going to happen, you know? And it was really scary. And then in the later afternoon, I never moved from that chair. I was sitting there holding the side of the chair. And
wow.
I probably dropped the mascara at some time on the floor, but, you know, I didn't go to work. I didn't know what was going to happen. And then I remember later in the afternoon, like at 4, the president landed here at our base. And they told it on the news. And I remember just bursting into tears, like, why would you tell? You know, why would you tell where the president was? You know, because then I'm thinking, mm-hmm. I got this base 30 miles away, and they just told the terrorists where the president was, you know, and he was a half hour from my place. It was one thing that it was New York and D.C. before, but, you know, the fact that they would announce, you know, where he was. But anyway, yeah, any of those huge changes, and it doesn't even have to be a huge change, but 9/11 and the coronavirus are monkeys in the head that are on a grander scale, and the brain injuries, of course. But, you know, sometimes, and that's why it's good, I found, you know, meditation and some other things, just the action opposite emotion is what I call it, like just getting up and going out and taking pictures in the backyard, or stopping my thought process and going and doing some genealogy, just something that breaks the broken record going on in my head, or the monkeys, you know, going on in my head. But there's even things that are kind of funny that are smaller. I got a car, new car, a couple of years ago, and, you know, three cars ago, they had more stuff on them than I know how to use or will ever know how to use. You know, as long as I can turn it on and get from point A to point B and know where drive and reverse and my windshield wipers are, can't really drive at night very well, so I don't have to worry about that too much, although the headlights go on by themselves. But there's all these options now. And, you know, when I was a couple cars ago, when I was trying to figure them out, because I felt compelled, like you bought this thing and you have to know what all these options are and the things that your car can do, I found that very stressful because I couldn't easily figure some of that stuff out. I'm not a techie, and our cars are computers, you know, now in a lot of ways. And then, you know, the way I got rid of those monkeys was by saying, no, it's your car. You don't have to do anything except the functions of driving it, obviously. And that took a lot of heat off, because then I could figure it out in my time or not at all. There's some options I'm sure I don't use. And then my cell phone is old. I'm, you know, not compelled to go out and buy the latest, greatest new cell phone every time one comes out. And so I've got an older one. And when I got this car a couple of years ago, it was a young kid. Everybody reminds me of a young kid these days. You can tell you're getting older when everyone seems like a kid. But this young man who sold me the car, that place in the middle where you maybe throw your sunglasses or something like that, there was a disc in there. And he told me that I could set my phone on there and it would charge my phone. And I said, well, I've got this case on my phone that gives it another full charge when it runs down. I guess I would have to take off my case. And I was kind of pondering to myself. And he said, what model of phone is that? And I said, a 6S. And he looked at me like I was from Mars. He said, well, I'm not sure that that option is going to work with a phone that old. And it turns out it doesn't, you know, which is fine. But I just thought that was kind of funny because that was a latest, greatest new option that came on your car that you just set your phone down and it would charge it, but you had to have the latest, greatest phone for that to be able to work. So there's some options I don't even need to bother figuring out. So, you know, it's good to sometimes with the monkeys in the head, obviously the big events are ones that are so hard to work through and bring so much angst. But there's some that aren't that big of a deal that sometimes we can make that big of a deal. And maybe it's because a lot of other things are going on or our head space is just a little off, you know. Things happen like you talked about being in crowded places back when you were on the board way back when. If that's the kind of thing that bother people, you know, if you haven't gotten enough sleep, if, you know, you then maybe in a proximity of a couple days have been at a place where there's a lot of sensory overload, if your eating schedule has gotten off or you've had, maybe you don't eat a lot of sweets and you've had too much sugar or something like that, a combination of little things can put us in a place where something that's not such a big deal becomes a really big deal in our mind. And I found it helpful when it's something like that to kind of do a mental checklist, you know, I'm feeling my heart racing about this, you know, I'm feeling jittery or angst about whatever this situation is, you know, this really isn't a game-changing thing here, because I don't like change either. It's a smaller change. But then I have to really look at what else is going on in my life that might be magnifying my reaction. And sometimes that's really helpful because it might mean going to take a nap. It might mean eating a few carrot sticks. You know, whatever, just changing my attitude, not thinking about it quite as much, maybe reaching out to someone else to talk about what's going on in their life if I know that they're having a struggle getting out of my head, you know, and helping someone else. So the tools that you learn along the journey, and those are a lot of the, you know, the things that you write about, the honesty of what it feels like and what happens and how you handle those situations.
Yeah, well, we all react differently to stresses. You know, and we all have our own buttons that get pushed, regardless of whether we've had a brain injury or not.
Right.
So we have to find a way to deal with those.
Time and practice.
Yeah.
Lots of practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, Well, and it's good. Writing is cathartic. At least it is for me. It's kind of a mental exorcism sometimes. Depending on what I'm writing, that helps right there sometimes. So anyway, so is there anything that you would like to touch on? We're coming to the end of the show. Anything that you'd like to leave people with? Again, just because, give me one second, I just got some new people in the chat room. Jeffrey Siebel is my guest tonight. You might want to check out, well, you do want to check out his website. Great blogs. We were just talking about some of the articles at his website, tbisurvivor.com. And his book, which promotes our abilities and strengths in finding a life worth living, Learning to Live with Yourself After Brain Injury, you can find on the homepage of his website a link that will take you to where you can buy the book. And we've been kicking off Brain Injury Awareness Month by talking tonight. So, okay, I just had a new group of people drop into the chat, so I thought it would be good to say who I'm talking to and announce your website again. But
I don't know if I had to... just say one more thing. It's very easy to get overwhelmed with the enormity of having to get your life back after brain injury. There's just so much involved, and it can frankly look pretty hopeless sometimes. Something to remember is that it's a small bit by bit journey. I don't always like using that word, but it's a small bit by bit journey where you work to recover your life or discover your new life as you go, so that you are prepared to move forward in a fulfilling way. And that might mean doing things completely different than you used to do them before. Doing what you know isn't always the best thing. Learning what you can do best sometimes is helpful. Discovering that part of you that embraces the changes brought on by your head injury so that you can learn to live a fulfilled life and be the person you are meant to be. So that's
absolutely
what I would say.
Very wise. That's a good thing to say. Well, Jeff, thank you so much. Maybe you can help me. One thing I wanted to remind people of is this Saturday night, at least I usually do it Saturday night, just so I don't forget and all is right on Sunday. But it's time to change our clocks again for those of us that have to, which is everybody but Arizona, right?
Yeah, I'm not even sure. But I think that's...
I don't think Arizona has to do it. I'm not sure why the rest of us are still doing this daylight savings time thing, but our clocks will change. It'll be... That old saying about...
Bring ahead.
Yeah, spring ahead, fall back. I never get that right. So let's say, let's just pick the time 10 o'clock. So it would really be what under our new time when we change the clock? We lose an hour of
spring
sleep,
ahead.
Right?
So it'll be 11 o'clock.
Okay. All right. So now we're all clear. Thank you. I didn't want to let you go before I got that
help. I hope that's right.
I do too. We'll all double check it. But anyway, Saturday night before you go to bed, go around and change your clocks, and it will be an hour later when you get up on Sunday and we have our time change. And it's weird because, you know, I always thought the time change signaled, you know, the beginning of fall or the beginning of spring, but that's not true. I think the first day of spring is like the 20-something
21st of
March. Right, the 21st of March. So I don't know how I got this through this many years in my life connecting the two, but daylight savings time and the change of season, spring being official, are not the same day. There's a couple week difference in there. But anyway, remember to change your clocks this coming weekend. And for those of us that want to make sure that we're punctual, I don't want you guys coming to the show an hour late. So anyway, thank you so much, Jeff, for being here tonight. It's been really nice to hear your voice and catch up again. I really enjoy reading your blogs and all of the things that you do to help the community. And I appreciate the fact that you were able to come on kind of short notice and be on the show tonight. I've got the rest of the month booked and I'm into April, but I had an opening and I was just really pleased to kick off Brain Injury Awareness Month to have a wise old sage like yourself, not that you're old, but experienced in brain injury, being a guest.
Thank you, Kim. It was
all
great
right.
Being here. Thank you for the work you do.
And you as well. All right. We'll see you around. And you think about it, if you want to wind up picking up that radio mic that you started in college, get back to me. Call me. You got my phone number. Yeah, I'll let you know what nights I have opened.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Thanks. Good night.
Good night. Okay, everybody. I encourage you to hear it was for the farmers. I know it was for the farmers, but so long ago. I don't see that we need daylight savings time anymore, I guess. We got about 20 minutes left in the show, and the last couple weeks you might have noticed I took off and I played tapes. You know, I'm very fortunate being around here 13 years. I've had some fabulous guests and topics, and we had someone last week, Meg Bussing, talk about, and these were two good shows the last 2 weeks rolling into Brain Injury Awareness Month. She talked about TBI evolving into epilepsy, and then I think the week before we had someone talk about stroke, and Jeffrey tonight, 1975 is when he had his accident, so he's a seasoned brain injury survivor and has really learned a lot he had a car accident. So we've had a little bit of everything of the brain and those injuries. But I wanted to play a new song tonight. This is unlike me. Most of you know my playlist and the kind of stuff I play, and I'll probably play Hatter's song in a while, but something kind of funny happened doing my genealogy one night. And, you know, what's in my personal playlist is not necessarily always in my show playlist. There are certain things that I would listen to at home I wouldn't put on the air here. But not a big but on that. I did mild of this span. But anyway, I was doing some genealogy, and my very first patriot — a patriot is someone in your lineage who fought in the American Revolution — and my very first one was named Captain Robert Pickens, and he was from South Carolina. And it turned out that there is a Pickens County named after — he also had a general who was his cousin, a little more famous, who fought in the Revolution. But the two of them came from Pickens County, which is still Pickens County, named after these guys, in South Carolina. I've never been there, but I was flipping through YouTube listening to some different music, and I was playing stuff that I recognize, but I got to — something popped up after a song that I do listen to a lot, by a band I had never heard of, and I glanced, and the name of the song was Pickens County. And I'm like, no way, that's Pickens County. And so, of course, that piqued my interest, and so I played the song. And I do really like the song. I did not put that in my studio. But I do like the song, and when I tell you about these guys, if you want to look it up, you can look it up and see what started it all. But it turns out that the band who sang Pickens County is called the Piedmont Boys. That's P like Paul, I-E-D-M-O-N-T, Piedmont Boys. And you can look them up on YouTube, the Piedmont Boys, and see some pretty naughty, I'll say shit-kicking, country, like to party and throw down guys. They're banned, and they probably have, I don't know, I think they've been together 20-some-odd years and have — I know I said a naughty word, but when you see them, particularly on YouTube, or I guess it's Spotify where you can buy their music, or you can look up the PiedmontBoys.com. Yes, good old boys. Thank you. That might have been more appropriate. They definitely like to drink in their videos, and of course I'm not a drinker, but these guys like to have a good time. So anyway, I wound up getting a hold of the guy, and who is the lead singer, writer, and owns the rights to all their music, and asked them if I could play a couple of their songs, or he told me I could play any of their songs, but I just picked out a couple, and then I'll leave it up to you guys if you like it. Go to YouTube and check out the Piedmont Boys, and you can actually see the videos that go with these two songs. The video to Pickens County, which you probably won't hear on the air here, but you can definitely go see it. And from, you know, the music from their other five albums, but really nice guy. He was really nice about it. At first, he thought I was a stalker or a fan gone wild trying to reach him. I assured him that was not the case. I'm safe. You know, I just have a radio show and I want to promote you for free. You know, I'm not getting paid for it. I just want to promote you for free. And no, I'm not a stalker. You won't hear from me again. Drop me a note that says you own the rights to the music and I've got permission to play it. And I would love to. This song is called, this would be a good song to open a show with, but it's called Come On Out Tonight. So this is the Piedmont Boys premiere on Recovery Now. Check it out. That was the Piedmont Boys. Greg Payne is the lead singer, and you can find them on YouTube. They just released a new album, and check it out. I believe it was Spotify for sure, but you can see the videos on YouTube. There are 5 albums. I think I'll play the one other song of theirs I put in the studio. They do have some colorful videos, and so the video that goes with that song is a lot of fun. That was Come On Out Tonight. This is, and then came You. I'll go ahead and just play the other one. Long as I'm launching the Piedmont Boys tonight, I got time for this one, and then maybe a couple others, and I'll check out.
Making up a new definition of sin, getting pretty good at some pretty bad living. I was running wild. I pushed it to the limit, any way you spin it. The whiskey and the wheel, hell, I probably jump in it. It's a beautiful thing when you come out grinning on the other side. I hit your ride with the devil, and I got down on his level. I even taught him a couple things that he didn't know. And I spent 15 years searching for a song in an empty bottle. I had lines, but none that I should use. And in came you. I had my buddies, I thought were my buddies, wasting my time chasing all the money. Ain't it funny how nobody loves you when the money's gone? I had my lovers, Lord, I had my lovers. Seen them come and go one after another. You can't find love underneath the covers, man, I had it all wrong. Now it's your ride with the devil, and I got down on his level. I even taught him a couple things that he didn't know. And I spent 15 years searching for a song in an empty bottle. I had lines, none that I should use. And in came you. came you. I was lost in a bottle, swimming in women, making up a new definition of sin, getting pretty good, some pretty bad living. I was running wild.
What you hear there is a 65 Mustang. He's getting in at the beginning and is peeling out at the end. So that's the Piedmont Boys. I hope that you like them. Check them out on YouTube and Spotify and their new release album. And I think, let's see, Hatter just left, and so maybe I'll switch gears. We are... Did he come back? He did. All right. I was going to play, because we have just enough time to do it. One of our good friends and fellow survivor, and I feel very blessed because this isn't out on the radio, is by Hatter, wrote it, and Bridget sings Words You Cannot Say.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, trying to run away. I'm watching from
cut that a little close there, but that was Hatter. Fellow survivor and musician, and I am super blessed to get to play his music here on Brain Injury Radio. So, excuse me, I will be back next week, and let's see, it'll be the second Tuesday of the month, so my co-host Karen Robinson will be with me. Dr. Maria will be back the following week, the third Wednesday. And Simon, our co-host for the last Wednesday of each month, who's been gone getting surgery for such a long time. Surgery, recovery, surgery, recovery, surgery, recovery. He's going to be back, I hope, for the very last show of the month. So, we're in Brain Injury Awareness Month. Put out a word to those that you run into, fellow survivors, and just regular people who may be uninformed and not know. Drop a couple of facts, like 34 million people live with brain injury. It's the third most common means of death and disability for people 65 and over and young children. Let's see, every 9 seconds, someone in the United States sustains a brain injury, and the list is getting exhaustive between brain injury, things that happen from the outside brain, assaults like in a car accident, domestic abuse, falls, things like that, concussion, now added to the list. And then acquired brain injuries, things like strokes, aneurysms, CTE, Parkinson's, and now COVID or long COVID, whatever they'll decide to call it, also added to the list. So brain injury, prevalent. Very prevalent. Everyone's heard of cancer, heart disease, diabetes. More and more people have heard of TBI or brain injury, but they really don't know as much, and chances are they know more than one person who has suffered a brain injury, whether they know it or not. So be tuning in this month for all of those on Brain Injury Radio. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I appreciate you. Good night and God bless. See you next week.